This evening, I'd kind of like to go through some of the common experiences, stresses, distresses that I hear pastors talking about, parish pastors. I have to clarify that. And I would do so with this statement. I'm not. These are probably not unique to the pastoral office. They're probably stresses and distresses that a lot of persons feel living in today's world. And I'd also like to suggest that you might see some of these issues as I describe them, as they might relate to your life or the life of the pastor whom you know, whether she or he is perhaps experiencing some of this. I think I mentioned last time, for those of you who weren't here, I serve Region 1, states of Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana, as a thing called consultation to clergy, which does confidential pastoral care for clergy persons. And it's sort of a fluid agency. And I just sort of like to talk about some of the issues that I hear most commonly expressed by pastors. And let me just start off by saying that there's a sense in which these issues are expressed at certain critical age levels. And the critical age levels that are described in most literature about pastors, some of the issues they face, are within the first 5 years after ordination, between the ages of 45 and 50, and somewhere within 5 years of retirement. Those are the most poignant ages. So to some extent, what we're facing in the ministry today, pastoral ministry, has a certain quality of some of the passages we go through in life. And being 49 myself, I'm through two of them now.
1 year to go,
well. 1 year to go. Well, that's true. Something could happen. I think I had that one, though. I've got a number of them. I'm not going to tell how many because in groups such as this, I sometimes don't get beyond two or three. And then somebody always wants to hold me to however many there were. But let me suggest that the first and by far the most prevalent stress issue I hear from pastors is summarized in the word loneliness. It is by far the most constant kind of experience I have working with pastors and also with pastor spouses. At any given moment, I kind of plan my day. For instance, I do a lot of pericope study groups with pastors, and I can imagine usually I sort of plan out my day by saying that if there's a pericope group of 20 pastors, usually I will be in 5 hours of conversation. One out of every five pastors in a group usually will need some time. And the primary issue they're facing is not a critical personal issue or any kind of issue of professional skills or anything, just the ability to find some person with whom to confront or engage in some of the issues of the isolation and loneliness they feel. There's a number of factors to this, and I think most of them tie in with our culture as a whole. Some of them are unique to the pastoral ministry, but certainly the ethic of rugged individualism, which permeates particularly a male culture. It's become a cultural norm of American society. The competitiveness that has become the sort of byword of rugged individualism. That competitiveness is also the byword of the process by which we become pastors. Whether it be the educational process or the endorsement process, somehow or other, the ideology of self-sufficiency, the ideology of keeping oneself to oneself permeates our system pretty thoroughly. So certainly just the American ethic of rugged individualism, or one's own, keeping one's thoughts to oneself or whatever. Also, I think, I suggested a minute ago, it is much more prevalently a male pattern. For males, I think it is the way in which we do bonding, the way in which we do friendship, the way in which we do intimacy, have really created some issues for us as male pastors. If I may suggest any book that I read this summer that bothered me, excited me, challenged me, it's James Nelson's Intimate Connection, Male Sexuality and Masculine Spirituality. Because in that, he defines very clearly the way in which we image God and the way in which we image self as being a very painful experience for the average American male Christian person. And he does so, I think, with some striking, startling perceptions, not only psychological, but also, and I think primarily theological. I think we've also lived in a certain kind of a heritage in American Christianity, certainly formed by Pietism especially, and that is a heritage which saw not only rugged individualism of our culture and of its definitions of sexuality, but also a rugged individualism on whole matters of religious faith and conviction. The are you saved? Do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? That whole language of so much of American evangelical Christianity still, I think, has a significant impact on the way in which a pastor who wrestles with the theological and certainly the salvation issues, for whom those issues of one's spiritual identity are really major issues. But the way in which we've defined individual salvation in the church and in our heritage, I think, have created for us individually an enormous sense of loneliness. So much so that for a pastor today, it's very difficult sometimes, very difficult, to form some sense of community with those with whom she or he ministers. And you hear this all the time. Something to the extent that my congregation is wonderful. Everybody there is a really good, warm, close-knit, tight family. But I myself do not use that, do not feel part of it, or at least do not feel part of it in quite the same way. And it comes from, I think, some theological stuff about establishing as one's kind of foundation of one's life some sort of a personal relationship to God. And certainly there is the pastoral office itself. There is a sense in which we put ourselves separate from persons. Someone made the comment last time we were together that he spent a great deal of his time and energy trying to be as human as possible. I think that's a kind of a constant quest of a lot of pastors, both men and women, kind of sometimes even going overboard into ways that kind of demonstrate frivolity or camaraderie or one another, because there's a sense in which we find ourselves, by popular attitudes about our office or about a caller or whatever, we find ourselves sometimes put in quite different categories. And there is the stark reality that we put ourselves there. We are the custodians of the secrets. We are persons who, for clinical protection and for privacy, sometimes set certain limits about the ways in which we relate to persons. There was a day when it was, I think, standard policy that one did not form friendships with parishioners. I can remember in my seminary days that that was highly recommended, that you not form. I suppose much of my initial pastoral experience was a violation of that. But there are times in my ministry, in the parish ministry, when I had to bury a good friend, or when I had to relate to persons in uniquely pastoral ways, that somehow or other put the distance there in those relationships which I really did not want to have. Also, I think, and finally, let me just kind of close or open this up just a bit, this topic at least. It seems to me that of the many vocations, pastors do very poorly in having for themselves some kind of personal, close peer relationship friend, support system, something like that, peer system. We did a survey with Consultation to Clergy about a year ago. And on that survey, we discovered that 22% of the pastors surveyed could report having a personal pastoral confidant, which means, of course, that 78% did not. 30% reported having access to a friend, and that included their spouse, who knows them well enough so that they can be open. Now, those kind of statistics, you know, I don't know exactly what that means. But it does mean that in my office, at least, one of the most frequent comments I hear is that a person is not having big problems, but that they really have no one with whom to share virtually the small problems. Any thoughts, any reflections? Mary, we were kind of vibing something similar to that. Yeah.
I guess my experience has been that the other pastors in the area where I serve aren't really interested in sharing with one another what their struggles are, even professional struggles, so we can work those out together. I tried to get a support group going last fall, and just a 45-minute thing before our tech study, and people were just unwilling to make that kind of commitment, although it only added 15 minutes to their commitment because we already ate lunch together anyway. People weren't even willing to share those kind of struggles with one another. It was just too threatening, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the peer systems in a lot of areas just simply don't work. It was interesting. I've noticed a big difference between my former location, which was Montana, and in which there are large numbers of rural and indeed very isolated pastorates, and my present location, which is downtown Seattle. In Montana, I mentioned the fact that yesterday that in general, the loneliest spot in the world is a suburban parish, and particularly a suburban parish between the ages, or up to the age of 50. But in general, urban parishes where there are peers nearby, are much, much lonelier for pastors than if you lived in Tudot, Montana, or West Overshoe, North Dakota. And the reason is because in Tudot and West Overshoe, pastoral peer friendships are usually much more intentional. They have to be. It comes under the category of survival. And the highest level of pastoral sense of fulfillment and happiness, feeling good about oneself and one's work, is usually in those small little rural parishes. Interesting.
If you say it's survival in Tudot and such, are the greater amount of pastors unwilling or unable to make friends? stave off that loneliness.
Well, I think in an, I think one of the characteristics about Two Dot and Westover Shoe, there is a Two Dot Montana. I don't want it. It's great.
They have creativity.
Great hamburgers there. There's only one business in Two Dot, and they serve hamburgers. They also sell overshoes. But I think one of the characteristics about the Two Dot pastor in Westover Shoe is that that pastor, she or he, is probably not in as highly competitive a situation.
Sure.
So the comparisons between persons don't take place. Because next to Two Dot is Harlotin. You know, and the whole Two Dot circuit or conference is consists of pastors who are in much the same sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And you don't have then the kind of sense of superior versus inferior parishes or persons. I don't want to glamorize Two Dot or Westover Shoe because they're very difficult places to minister in their own right. And they're very lonely. But in terms of peer support, that is not quite so much an element of their loneliness.
Ellen, isn't the existence of your job a symptom of the
problem? Oh yeah, absolutely.
You can't share with one another or with the bishop or with the assistant to the bishop because you're jeopardizing your future.
Yes.
Some secret or some word will get out and you're consigned to Two Dot for the rest of your life. So
yes.
They need people like you.
Well, I think the system itself is permeated with this kind of individualistic ethic, and I don't know exactly where it enters. I think it's part of the processes of selecting pastors. It's a part of the process. I think the discussion we had yesterday, for instance, let me just spin back something on you. A number of you were talking about your pastor as just wonderful. Several persons used superlative terms of the pastor, describing a person in very superlative categories. Or this wasn't so much during, in later discussion. I suggest to you that that whole comparative and superlative grading of pastors creates for the pastor the very systemic problem that I think I'm talking about. It's very, very difficult. Very difficult to break that down, just culturally.
Let's put another thread in here. Let's not let Terry off the hook as a theological educator, because there is not a seminary in the country where you can write a paper collectively and have that affirmed as a good way to meet the requirements of the course.
Oh, sure, that's all time reference.
Does it?
No, a number of other seminaries, too.
Does it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
Say some more about that.
I'm not sure I know what you're asking there.
Well, it's my sense that the educational system makes gaps in between people as learners rather than brings them together as learners.
But it's true. I think your point's well taken. It doesn't happen often enough.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't happen in enough places. There's no question about that. It would help.
Yeah,
I've served in two parishes. One was in rural eastern Oregon, and the other one now is in Mount Vernon, which is a somewhat of a suburb. And there's Lutheran churches around that were not the case in eastern Oregon. And that was really true. The fellowship in eastern Oregon was far better. We had to go 150 miles.
Yeah.
And so, but there was no competition. And it seems to me that there, now, there's that period. It's subtle, but it's there. There's a sense of competition. And as much as I like support groups, I think the thing I get worried about in terms of support groups, if someone said, well, we're going to have a half an hour support group, there's a tendency in those support groups, even if there's a subtle competition, that you then begin to get success stories, which can even make you feel even worse.
Yes.
So you've got a problem, and you spill your guts, and your colleagues say, well,
I used to have that problem.
Yes.
You feel worse. You say, yes. I'm the only one in this Senate who feels this way. And I'm wondering if...
And that's why people didn't come.
I would pick out one person. I would seek someone out.
Do you feel that with women pastors too, or do you have to experience?
Certainly loneliness is much more prevalent among women pastors just simply because of their isolation from other women pastors.
But do you think they're more, the ones I know, I think are more comfortable with having friendships with other or women that they knew in seminary laying themselves open to being more vulnerable and sharing and supporting.
But the peer relationship loneliness is really acute for women pastors. But
how about across the the lines? I mean, like a Presbyterian minister and a Lutheran pastor and more ecumenical type of sharing. Is there less competition in those groups?
There is. And in fact, many pastors report that their closest friends in a given community are pastors of other denominations.
That's what I have kind of noticed. With male pastors, if that's what I
heard. Where it works and where it functions,
especially priests.
It functions very, very well.
Question I would have is if this implies that there is a kind of distance between the altar and the pew, I'm wondering if the father, seeing this as a family situation, if the father has this kind of distance from his or her children, does this establish a kind of model in which the children also may have added difficulties in having closeness with each other? And I would wonder if there's been any research that might show that a pastor that has a particularly close relationship with the parishioners, if that also may show itself among the kind of intimacy among the parishioners as well.
That's interesting. I don't know of that research, but it reminds me of another piece of research that I think is rather startling, and that is a very disproportionately large number of pastors have themselves had significantly bad relationships with their own fathers. Pastors are quite often persons who spend a lot, and I don't want to get too Freudian on this whole thing, and I don't want to develop it into some kind of pathology. But I think a lot of us are persons who have lived in rather cold and austere senses of acceptance by key male figures in our life. Emotional warmth and acceptance. And for some reason or other, that seems to have a disproportionately high incidence in persons who go into ministry. And I think a lot of pastors spend a lot of their life working that out. Does that fit where you're going? And I think that's part of the loneliness thing, because we really don't do bonding very well. And a lot of the reasons we don't do bonding very well, whether with peers or with parishioners, with laity or with neighbors or whatever, is because of the way in which we feel ourselves perhaps accepted. Which is why I think a lot of our Lutheran theology from pulpits just is so continually on the theme of you are accepted by God. I mean, why wouldn't you be? You see. So I think there's some theological ramifications of this in the way in which we do preaching and stuff like that. Why wouldn't you be given the nature of God? That's just another extension of that, of some research that has been done, in fact.
It seems to me that a good number of people develop their working peer relationships because they are simply around those people during the course of a day.
Mm-hmm.
Pastors are not.
And, that's true.
I see sometimes more of pastors from other churches than I do pastors on the same staff. And to have perhaps three pastors on a staff is a fairly large staff. So there isn't much just common time shared in which relationships would develop.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And the success ratio of staff ministries in churches is just devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, you want a grim story.
You want a grim story.
No, pastors to pastors and multiple pastor staff. We do not relate one well with one another, working together.
Well, you're definitely competing.
Yeah.
Yes, a tolerable situation is a very good situation among pastors.
Yeah.
Because most of them are not that.
They're not tolerable?
No.
Well, I don't know about most, but many.
What would be the conditions under which a solo male parish minister could find it relatively comfortable to find this kind of support from members of the parish or peers who are not of the clergy?
Let me throw that to the lay persons here, the pastors here.
I'm just struck by the fact that this has been a very active discussion about clergy relating to other clergy peers, and as a layperson, I resent the implication that I'm not a peer of a clergy person. And it just led me to reflect again on that split and whether or not clergy can find support from laypersons in the parish or in other contexts in the town in which they live.
Yeah.
I think it's a mistake to say that I'm going to be a friend with another person simply because we share the same profession. Mm-hmm. And I think it's crazy to just go out and seek that. Mm-hmm. I have really been blessed with, I have three very, very good friends in my parish. Now there's some risks, but I find that they're, I'm far closer to them than I am any other clergy and enjoy their company. So, I mean, I don't think it's that hard to do except you take some risks.
What could you specify?
If their problem, if you know, when they have problems, one of them has said, in terms of their own marriage, I don't know if I could come to you. I don't know if we could come to you and talk to you about our marriage because of our religion, our friendship. So you know, you can, the personal closeness can cause you to be ineffective mm-hmm. in what you do. Well, I mean, there's other people you can talk to. But that would be, I think, a major risk.
Yeah, my pastor beats me in golf every time.
Hardly the basis of a friendship, huh?
I'm not a pastor, but I worked in industry for many years. And some of what you're saying about the difficulty for relationships with your peers and with certainly with your supervisors, your superiors, I don't see it as terribly different than what you're saying, other than the fact that the pastor frequently is out by himself, sort of, whereas generally in industry you're in with a large number of people. Mm-hmm. But I find this peer competitiveness, you're not going to share with your peers something that's going to allow them to excel you. There's always this competitiveness that's going on, and mm-hmm. there's not that closeness that I found in industry anyway, mm-hmm. that you're looking for it, apparently. You find your friends other places.
Mm-hmm.
Your close friends.
I think one of the problems of a parish pastor is that the parish pastor's life becomes so thoroughly ingrained within that church community, so that one's friendships, one's relationships, one's family, one's husband or wife and children, they're all part of that same system, which is different than my neighbor who works for the city. He leaves his professional system and comes home. His wife has nothing to do with that. His children have nothing to do with that system. And I think that's one of the characteristic distinctions, is that it's very hard for a pastor to leave his professional or her professional system.
I'm single, and I was also the only pastor in a small parish, and thinking about what you're saying, I mean, you know, it's like, it just seemed like, you know, playing with fire, and it was real hard for me to pull out of that, you know, system. I mean, there's no time to have relationships elsewhere. There's, mm-hmm. you know, how do you find that time? Where is the place?
Come to hold it.
Let me move on to another one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that because I deal with a lot of people in a parish, there has been over the years, and maybe it's not so anymore, but to be a pastor, there's always been a sort of a mystique around the office of pastor with lay people. And, I mean, it's hard for a pastor to be a regular guy. Maybe it's possible in a setting like Holden, where you can call a pastor by his first name or whatever. But in the parish, pastor is pastor to many, many people yet, particularly an older generation of people who see the pastor in a slightly different light than perhaps pastors see one another. You're all very human, with human problems. So I don't know whether some of you younger pastors feel that with the people in your parish. It used to be much worse if your parsonage were connected to the church. Now you're able to at least buy your own homes. I think maybe 90% of pastors can own their own homes, so that you have a modicum of private life. Not maybe the same as the lay person's private life. But how does this mystique thing affect you, those of you who are preaching or having parish? Is that a factor? Maybe it isn't. Do you feel set apart?
I'm a preacher's kid as well as a pastor, and I grew up in a home where I felt that, but I'm very fortunate I don't feel that at all in my congregation. Not a bit.
Are you get a lot of young people in your young families in your congregation?
Yeah, but I have no friends in the congregation. So I don't think that really made a difference.
How long have you been in that church?
6 years.
You still have no friends?
Well, I shouldn't say I have no friends. I don't have, my closest relationship is with another staff person. There's a couple of people.
Yo.
Well, I just commented as a preacher's son, the comment you made in regard to your whole family's involved. I remember as a teenager when I got to be very critical, and every Sunday I'd come home and criticize my father's sermon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one Sunday came to abrupt halt. He didn't want that criticism Sunday noon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the only job. There aren't many jobs where your wife can criticize you, your kids can criticize you, everybody can criticize you because you're right out in front for everybody.
I got this son that was an English major in college, and he used to come home and criticize my grammar. That was really, really low form. Smart aleck kid.
Well, when we were back in the Midwest, talk about a little town, real small town, we went to a picnic with a minister. And so I asked him, I said, well, a hot day like this, I'm going to have maybe something to stimulate, you know, the sweat. So he says, well, as long as you take it back home, you wake up the empty ones. In other words, the empty cans.
What you're saying was that he could not, in his
small parish,
in his small parish, in his backyard, have any beer cans in his garbage can.
Yeah.
That's a clergy problem.
That's his problem.
That's a clergy problem. I think people talk about, well, my parish puts me in a box. That's baloney. We put ourselves in a box, and we just let that happen.
Let me move on to at least one more issue that I sense as being very, very critical in the life of a lot of clergy, particularly clergy who face real high stress burnout stuff. It's been suggested that burnout is not, in fact, a psychological problem or indeed a problem of overwork, that it is really, at its heart, a problem of spirituality. And I hear this issue of one's own sense of self as a spiritual person as a paramount issue clergy face. The Brecky Hume Barron's volume of about 3 years ago highlighted that, I think, as number one. The way in which a pastoral person deals with a sense of worship when that pastoral person is the worship leader. Mm-hmm. One level of it. The way in which you find time alone. The way in which you create time alone. The way in which, in a constantly public office, you begin to understand some sense of a private personal identity space. The problem is distinctly different for men and for women. Again, just like the loneliness one, this is not usually a problem of women pastors. It is, however, a paramount problem for male pastors. And it has to do with the way in which we worship, the way in which we do devotional life. It's the role we have. There's also the whole sense of freedom that enters enormously into the spirituality issue. That one slowly has a feeling, or many people have a feeling of being almost controlled in the ways in which they engage and reflect and think about themselves as spiritual persons. The element of freedom and creativity gets lost, and everything becomes kind of rubricized in terms of the latest issue of a devotional volume or whatever. A strong sense of an inner self, what I would call, or what James Nelson would call, the incarnational sense of God, is, I think, very strained in a lot of clergy persons. The sense of integrating one's theological knowledge with some sense of one's own personal dynamics of life gets really difficult. I might say that the most pastors lay this problem somewhere else. The problem is the system, the problem is the job, the problem is the seminary that didn't teach me how. That's one of the more current fashionable issues.
Yeah, I think that's a real problem for the seminaries right now.
But it is I would suggest, a critical stress issue for parish pastors. The sense of their own identity as spiritual human beings. And integrate very strongly with that, let me just couple two of them together here. When that becomes sacrificed, you always have this tremendous emptiness of the sense of self as a called vocation of God. Those two are really, really closely related. The sense of oneself as a pastor, a sort of a sense of living out some kind of a Christological image, or some kind of a sense of self as called by God, appropriate to this task to which God has called me. I lump all that together as a matter of spirituality, and I just kind of throw that out to you. I hear this a lot when pastors talk. Let me tell you what one of the ways I hear about it. When pastors talk about members of theirs who are leaving to join the Assemblies of God, they say to me, so-and-so and such a family left because they said they weren't being spiritually fed at my parish. they're right, you know, because I'm spiritually empty. And it sometimes takes that kind of form. Thoughts, reflections.
I wonder what kind of models we have for spirituality among pastors, and would it be correct to say that the dominant model is one that you raised earlier of a sort of a pietistic form, particularly
devotional, as we
look to older clergy now? That, I think, is the model that they probably grew up with and assumed. It's certainly not a model that fits with me, but I only know personally one or two older ministers that I, you know, would look up to as mentors who don't fit into that. If it were not for them, I'm not exactly sure what I would do.
What model are you talking about?
It's sort of a pietistic model, a minister being set apart, kind of the holy man in this case. And I wonder if maybe one of the benefits women have is not having so many of those kind of models around, because you're sort of forging your own way, and there isn't a dominant model already in place that if you're not fitting that, then of course you're not spiritual.
Well, let me just kind of spin on what Nelson would say, and because I think the distinction between men and women here is kind of part of his argument. And what he is suggesting is that women are much more able to have an inner sense of themselves, and they don't talk about having a relationship to God as God who is apart from me. So that spirituality is in fact an integration of one's own identity. And Nelson is suggesting, I'm just using his language, that for many men clergy in our culture, spirituality is a personal relationship to a God who is quite a ways away, and whom I approach with a certain kind of procedure.
There's more of an intimacy, I think, that women feel. I think part of it too, I'm wondering, because I have heard this from a clergy wife, was that pastors, male pastors, identify with Jesus. And there's a certain pattern of behavior or perfection or something that they're supposed to meet. And women, this may be just nuts. But I think it is. There's that our male image of God, and men have to live up to that. They feel, I think, male clergy that I have worked with and dealt with, and at the seminary, you know.
What do women live up to then?
I think it's what you were saying about the relationship. We are able to relate to God intimately as a separate identity, but one that we can be vulnerable with and to, and be in a relationship, in a closer relationship, but not be, maybe part of the competition thing. You always have to compete with Jesus. Help me out with this, you girls. Am I soft?
No,
tell me, Mary.
My experience is very parallel to yours, but I would maybe add a little corner of it, which is that many women, in order to be ordained at all, have to confront patterns of belief and disbelief in themselves in a very serious way. Mm-hmm. And whether it's Entusaki Shanga's "I Found God in Myself and I Loved Her Fiercely," if I believe this, can I be a Lutheran? Can I be a Christian? And they are free to ask outrageous questions sometimes, mm-hmm. and to struggle with whether or not their answer to that is one that they can live with and be comfortable with. Doesn't have to be a great classic answer, doesn't have to be Luther's, it doesn't have to, you know, stand throughout the ages, but if it's one I can live with, then that spiritual struggle has an integrity and a center that lasts and wears and grows, I think, in a very powerful way. So that you may find women who've been ordained 10 or 12 years who will just say, well, I don't believe that. Or that's a notion of God, that's a critical parent, just another critical parent, why would you believe that? you know, they're very strongly grounded in their own sense of struggle about those issues, and in have a lot of permission not necessarily to believe what they know they're supposed to believe, or someone told them they're supposed to believe. And it's very beautiful. I mean, it's like meeting people who have a deep well in the middle of themselves, which seems to, from which they can draw and draw and draw.
Well, we talked yesterday about the various historical currents, and I think one of the, there's the male-female issue, past spirituality issue, and I think there's also ways in which we have changed the imaging of that office, whether it's a social activist or the pastoral counselor, caring, loving, warm, or whether it's some sort of a sacramental image of doing things right and administrative image. Those images become very, very performance-oriented, very function-oriented. And so that spirituality, for many pastors, becomes very strained if I feel I'm doing my job badly. See what I mean?
Or do you feel like spirituality is a goal? Like men see spirituality more as something you have to work towards or work to be? Is that what you're saying?
I'm suggesting that spirituality is primarily a sense of how one sees oneself as a person, as a child of God, as a human being in and through whom God is present and operative.
If I go back to my comment on Sunday, if there's any issue in my experience, at least, but rather limited, that the seminary has struggled with over the last 10, 15 years, it's this one. And I don't think we're very far along in this discussion as to how best to work with students who are on their way to becoming pastors or lay professionals for that matter. Henry Horne who's a famous LCA patriarch from the East, in whose expertise is in the area of worship, a pastor at Harvard for years, spent 2 years on our campus. And he talked all the time about the fact that this generation is between pieties. As that we have the piety of my father, my grandfather were both pastors, I can just see it all laid out there, but it can't be mine. For heaven's sakes, it can't be mine. But they were very clear about who they were as children of God and what their spirituality was. Maybe my children will pick something up, but this generation is neither where we've been nor we're not where we ought to be or where we might be. We're searching, and the theological faculties at seminaries are searching too. I don't know if I did an accreditation visit to a Free Methodist Seminary in Kentucky, and over the last 5 years they put 3 new faculty in the area of spiritual formation, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. As an effort to meet this issue, thinking it's a problem.
I got to attend a theological conference as a lay associate, and I was one of the few lay people there. It was 95% pastors. And the subject was spirituality, and they had 3 speakers come. There was a teacher from, I think it was Chicago Seminary, 40, is that?
That's from St. Paul, if there's Northwest.
Okay, well anyway, he was one, Elmer Witt was another, and then there was an Episcopal one, who each had different insights into spirituality. The pastor from Northwestern had a full house. The pastor from Holden, or here, had like maybe 2/3. And it was less than half for the Episcopal woman who was talking about meditation and healing and that sort of thing. And I was appalled at the fact that so many of the pastors were so unsure of their own spirituality that they couldn't even listen to the other two. And a couple of them came up to me afterwards that I knew from Houston, and said, what did that Episcopal woman have to say anyway? And I said, I'm not going to tell you.
You didn't have the courtesy to come in here.
Well, that's not my kind of thing. I said, well, then you're awfully curious about something that you know, that's not your... but they were so totally uncomfortable that they just pulled themselves out. They went where they knew they would hear what reinforced what they had as an understanding. And I think that what you say about the two different worlds, they're between it. They need a little more of that middle ground. Some of the people might from here and from a little of the Assembly of God, if you will. They need a more personal sense, interpersonal sense of God. But they don't know how to get there. And they're afraid to hear it.
I guess I feel maybe 30 years out of date by this whole conversation. Spirituality, and this is what you're talking about, is not a concept that I'm even familiar with. I guess where I'm coming from is closer to the old Lutheran tradition. That my favorite quotation from Bunyan's book, Martin Luther, I Stand, is at Leipzig at that height of debate, you know, the heat of the battle of debate there with Eck. He said, if the Lord spoke through the jawbone of an ass, he could even speak for a university theologian. A Christian theologian, huh? I mean, that to me is it's the Word. And Word can speak through anyone. But it's the power of the Word, and not the vehicle so much, or the pastor. But spirituality seems to be placing the emphasis away from something which I would call the Word, which is that's the gospel, the Word. That's where the power is, not the pastor.
Ellen, do you know whether these issues you've talked about, the loneliness and the spiritual emptiness or whatever, are these clergy issues or are they Lutheran clergy issues?
Oh, they're clergy issues. Clearly. Across the board. I mean,
so other denominations?
Oh, yeah. I've taught. I was with the Catholic faculty in Montana, and this same... I will say that I worked with an Anglican faculty in England, Anglican church there, a theological college, and when a student arrived, they were appointed a spiritual director, and spiritual director was the primary element of their curriculum, and it had an incredibly powerful impact. There were some huge problems with the way in which they do theological education that I would not want to repeat, but I was very impressed with the way in which they did spirituality. Particularly since a lot of the Anglican form, they have all different categories of clergy, diaconate, ordained, unordained, various levels, and they also have a large number of non-stipendiary clergy, so that one's service to the church is not the source of one's income. As a matter of fact, most of the students at the theological college I was associated with were not going to be, quote, professionals. They were going to be clergy without income. That radically changed the way in which they did spirituality. And I think that was probably one of the most determinant factors in the way in which they did spirituality.
I'm puzzled about your response, because the other morning, Terry Krenheim, in his Bible study, held up that cover of the Lutheran which all those questions that were being asked by the sort of Lutheran in the pew were on the cover, and there were things like, why me, God, and why is there evil in the world, and why do people suffer, and what is God really like? They sounded to me like very much the same sort of spiritual issues that you're talking about now. And did I get this wrong? And have I just not understood that?
I didn't hear Terry. I must have been to the early Bible study.
I'm not quite certain about your point, Mary.
Well, I thought Elvin was just saying that these are not lay issues.
Oh,
lay
no, I didn't say that.
Are not having spiritual crises.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. I didn't say
what
that.
What did you say?
I was saying, his question was, are these issues facing other denominations? And I'm saying they're facing all, I think all denominations are facing.
Jehovah's Witness and...
Well, I don't have that much experience, exposure to Jehovah's Witness, I've got to confess.
Well, I wonder, because they're booming, they're growing, yeah. I wonder if they're doing something different.
Clergy. I don't say that. You know, I mean, I guess it's kind of funny, but I don't mean, you know, they don't have clergy. What do they have? Everybody's the minister.
Let me just one more, and then.
Excuse me. One thing Ellen told me when we were hiking is that you know, Catholic priests have the highest incidence of addiction to drug and
substance
alcohol,
abuse.
And that clearly speaks to a spiritual dearth of substance. Oh, yeah, that too, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. One final one, and that is the enormous split pastors feel between their own theological, spiritual sense of what is right and the realities of power in the church. The politics and power of congregations, the politics and power of the systems, of the synods, of the systems of educations, the systemic cruelties and dehumanizations, the lack of freedom for any sense of self, the feeling constantly of being marginalized or of being treated as a non-person, and somehow or other being victimized by political and power structures within the system itself, be it congregational or synodical or whatever. That kind of, how shall we say it, that kind of dosage of reality is for many pastors a stark and just devastating realization. And I speak specifically to the issue of pastoral parish conflict, which at any given moment is prevalent in our region. We figure that at any given moment, one out of every 10 parishes is somewhere in the process of getting rid of its pastor. That's our kind of going rate right now. Now, they won't all be fired. Most of them will, in fact, be shuffled out of town to another call. But that's kind of what we're dealing with, is the reality of power and the way in which power works in the church and the way in which pastors who are trained on quite a different idiom of thought and life and imaging of God hit that and really hit it with, I think, some devastatingly cruel kind of realizations. Any thoughts on that one? Cheerful note to close.
Wow. Can we talk about that for an hour next time?
Yes, we can.
I'm curious to know whether you've noticed any difference in female male on this one.
No, I don't think so. I think the difference between female and male on this one is that women pastors are much more surprised by it. Men pastors probably, because the games of power are usually, I think, largely male games. And I think women somehow or other sometimes naively think that this doesn't go on in the church. And so they're just utterly devastated by the realization of it. And, you know, I think it's prevalent. I think it's systemic.